This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Science Weekly is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honor of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organization, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat. But Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/Earth Day this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
...2022 saw record after record broken for extreme weather events. Heat waves in India.
Now, anyone who's been to India knows it gets hot, but 49.2 degrees is something else entirely.
Droughts in Europe and East Africa.
Record-breaking heat waves linked to climate change have dried up rivers across the continent and sent water reserves plummeting to historic lows.
Floods in Pakistan.
There are now fears of acute food shortages after the series of devastating floods have led to just over 1,200 deaths.
If you thought we might get lucky in 2023 and have a bit of a let-up, bad news, I'm afraid. El Niño is on the way. And it could bring with it even more extremes and send temperatures off the charts. So what do we need to know about the arrival of El Niño? And is there anything we can do to prepare? From The Guardian, I'm Ian Sample, and this is Science Weekly. Damien Carrington, you're The Guardian's environment editor, and you've written about the return of El Niño. What is El Niño, first of all?
Yeah, hi, Ian. Thanks for having me. So El Niño is one half of a natural climate cycle which comes and goes over the period of a few years. So El Niño is a warmer phase, La Niña, which is the other side of the cycle. That's the cooler phase. And it's all down to what's happening in the equatorial Pacific Ocean. In La Niña periods, which is what we've been in for the last 3 years, which is a little bit unusual to have that run, what happens is the trade winds around the equator and the Pacific Ocean are stronger going towards the west, and that pushes the warmer water on the surface over towards the west, and it kind of piles up over there. What happens when those trade winds weaken is that that water comes flowing back across the Pacific, spreading out all that kind of hot water, and then that's an El Niño. So La Niña leads to cooler temperatures around the world, and in El Niño, it leads to warmer temperatures around the world. And of course, that also has a big impact on regional weather patterns.
And what sort of impact do these different cycles have on weather in different places?
A lot, right? So this El Niño, La Niña phenomenon is the biggest cause of year-to-year differences in weather in many regions around the world. Nearer the location of the Pacific, the stronger the effects. But so, for example, in the West Pacific, places like Indonesia and Australia get hotter and drier conditions during El Niño. China can suffer flooding in the Yangtze after big El Niños. In India, the monsoon can be suppressed. Rains in southern Africa can also be reduced by El Nino events. And then in East Africa and the southern US, the opposite happens, so that you go from drier conditions to more rain and flooding. And you can even get impacts as far north as Europe. So, for example, during El Nino events in Spain, you tend to get more rain.
And how often do these events cycle around? I mean, are El Nino and La Nina very regular?
No, they're not, which is one thing that makes it a bit more tricky to keep a track of. It's usually the cycle operates over, three, 4 years, something like that, sometimes a bit quicker, sometimes a bit slower. The scientists also talk about neutral conditions, so when it's not really much of one or the other. So there's a sort of transition phase as you go from one to the other. But it's been studied for a long time, so people understand the impacts of it really well, and they can sort of track it and forecast it to a certain degree. But in terms of its regularity, it's not like clockwork.
So if El Nino and La Nina are normal parts of the global weather cycle, why should we be worried about an El Nino this year?
The worry is that when El Nino comes, it increases the average global temperature. And then on top of that, you've got this steadily rising temperature trend due to human-caused global heating because of all the CO2 and other greenhouse gases we're pumping into the atmosphere. So when you get into that El Nino phase, which is the hotter phase, you're kind of supercharging the trend of global heating that we're already experiencing.
Other countries are undoubtedly going to bear the brunt of this, but are there any sort of impacts we might see here in the UK?
The Met Office says that El Nino years can increase the risk of colder winters, actually, in the UK, but the biggest effects on our weather will probably not be related to El Nino.
You've spoken to a good number of scientists about what they think could happen when El Nino comes back. What are they thinking? What are they saying?
I think the short answer is they're all concerned. So there's a number of things to talk about. One is, when will we pass the 1.5 degrees centigrade temperature target, which was set, at the Paris Agreement? When will be the first time we cross that? And that's very likely to be when the next El Nino arrives, the scientists were telling me. I think the chance, according to the Met Office, is about 50-50 in the next 5 years that we'll cross that sort of symbolic threshold. People are also worried that, of course, we've seen increasing heat waves around the world. They've been more intense. They've been more frequent. I mean, last summer in Europe was the hottest on record and was judged to have been impossible without the global heating trend. So when you then add in that sort of additional boost that you get to temperatures from El Nino, that's when you really start to worry. And, the link between temperature and extreme weather around the world is pretty direct, in that obviously with heat waves, it's a very direct one, but also hotter temperatures in the seas can fuel more intense and stronger hurricanes. You also get more rainfall because there's more moisture in the air. And there's a lot of concern. I mean, there's one person in particular, Professor Jim Hansen, who famously blew the whistle on climate change back in 1988 in front of the US Congress. He reckons, by 2024, we'll probably see global temperature off the charts, in his words, if we get this big El Nino.
That 1.5 degree figure is such a significant one when it comes to how we think about the climate crisis. How do you think people will react if El Nino pushes us over that mark?
It's a good question. I think that, first of all, you need to sort of think, well, okay, going above 1.5 for 1 year isn't the end of the world. It's, when we get consistently above that, that we'll really be considered, from a scientific point of view, to have passed that threshold, because there is this inherent variability from year to year. But standing back from that, 1.5C as a target was put in the Paris Agreement. It was fought really hard for by a lot of the developing countries, including the small island states. And so it has become extremely symbolic. And I think that it will have a big impact on politics and people's perception that we've passed this threshold. And I think that will be important, and hopefully that will help spur on more action. But what I'd also say is that, the climate crisis is a gradual one. So if we do pass 1.5C, it isn't actually a physical threshold, at which point a whole new bunch of extreme weather and other disasters is unleashed. And so when you think about it, if we do pass 1.5C consistently, then you know, we need to say, okay, let's keep it to 1.55 or 1.6 and fight for every tenth of a degree, because every tenth of a degree that we manage to avoid simply means, you know, less suffering in the world.
So El Niño is certainly exacerbating the impacts of the climate crisis. But do we know whether rising temperatures themselves are feeding back and impacting on El Niño and La Niña events?
The short answer is no, and it's a really good question, because obviously in terms of forecasting, predicting, giving people early warnings of what's happening, knowing how that's changing because global heating is causing temperatures to rise all around the world is really important. But I spoke to Tim Palmer at Oxford, a professor there, and he was saying that essentially the climate models that they run aren't high enough resolution to really get a grip on that question. And so he's actually been working on a sort of campaign almost really to try and develop an international supercomputing effort. He sort of likened it to the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, which allows particle physicists from lots of different countries to do more than they could by themselves. And he sort of wants a $1 billion international supercomputing center, which would then be able to attack this problem and find out a bit more about how global heating itself affects the cycle between the two phases of El Niño and La Niña.
Do we know that El Niño is definitely going to hit this year? And if we do we know roughly when it might kick in?
In terms of forecasting El Niño, the scientists I was talking to talked about a spring predictability gap. And what they meant was that until you've got past the spring, it's quite hard to be very sure about what's going to happen. So they'll have a much better idea probably around May, June time. At the moment, though, the scientists are predicting there's about a 2/3 or 66% chance of El Niño returning. In terms of the timing of it, that's much better known, because there's been, you know, lots of El Niños, La Niñas over the last century when people have been studying them. So they know that pretty well. So El Niño tends to arrive in terms of these raised temperatures in the equatorial Pacific around September time. And because this sort of extra heating that it brings takes a while to feed through into the climate system, in terms of global annual temperatures, it's 2024 when there's this likelihood that a new record would be set.
So now that we can predict when El Niño might be coming, at least with, you know, some level of accuracy, are there things we can do to prepare for this year?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, so the meteorologists around the world have been working to try and improve their forecast of El Niño, La Niña cycles for a long time, because obviously the more you can do to prepare for different weather conditions, the better. So most famously with the anchovy fishermen off Peru, their fish stocks absolutely disappear when one phase of the cycle comes along. So there's some knowledge there. It can be in terms of, you know, readying emergency services if you think there's going to be more heat waves or more floods. For farmers in some places, it might influence the choice of crops they're going to sow for the following season. So absolutely, there's a great deal that can be done. And sort of in parallel with this, actually, the UN through the WMO, that's the World Meteorological Organization, are having a big push at the moment to try and get early warning systems in place for particular sort of intense events like floods, hurricanes and heat waves. You know, one of the reasons I kind of wanted to write the story was just to sort of raise the issue because we know it's coming, and the more preparation that we can do, the better.
Thanks to Damien Carrington. You can read his article about El Niño at theguardian.com. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by Holly Fisher. The sound design was by Solomon King. And the executive producer was Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.